comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful, beautiful place we call Earth. Thanks for being here at The Kevin Smith Show, and thank you for those of you who are joining us for the very first time. Welcome aboard. We're glad to have you. I think you're going to enjoy talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. I'm here because it matters. So do you. Another thing that matters is our survival meter. Have you taken a look at it? It's on my website. You need to take a look at it. KevinSmithShow.com. And something else that matters. What's the truth? Have you given some thought to that? I mean, really, have you given some serious thought to what is truth? You know, there's at least two categories of truth. Probably more, but there's at least two. Now, one category of truth is universal truth. These are generally very simply stated, easy to understand, and they're called universal truths because it's true here, it's true on Mars, it's true on the Moon, it's true all the way across the universe. Anywhere you go, anytime, it's true. Now, an example of that is if you add this to this, what do you get? This. Now, we have created some words for that. If you add 2 plus 2, you get 4. Now, that happens anywhere in the universe. That's a universal truth. But there are contextual truths as well. Things that are true within a certain context. They're not true everywhere, they're not true all the time, but within a certain context, they are true. For instance, we could say humans require an atmosphere that's 18 to 21% oxygen, and the rest of it is a mixture, but most of it's nitrogen. Well, that is true within the context of living on the surface of the Earth. But if you go underwater and you dive down really deep, that concentration of atmosphere will kill you. Deep sea divers use something called trimix. It's a mixture of three gases, and the mixture is based on how deep they are planning to go. So a 1070 trimix would mean they're breathing 10% oxygen, 70% helium, and about 20% nitrogen. Now, you don't breathe 70% helium out here on the surface. Within the context of living on the surface, 18 to 21% oxygen is what you breathe. But within the context of going way down in the ocean, say 200-300 feet or more, you might be breathing 10% oxygen, 70% helium, and 20% nitrogen. Why is all that important? Well, let me ask you something. Would you say that the world we live in is certainly not the world that used to be? The Earth is not the same as it used to be? Would you say that chances are it's not the same as it's going to be? What if it's not even the same as you think it is? We'll be back to talk about that right after this. welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Walter Bosley, well known to our regular listening audience. Those of you who have been with us for a while are familiar with Walter Bosley, and you know that he is a former special agent for U.S. Air Force OSI, and you know that he is an author and a publisher, and always a very interesting guest when we have him on the show. Walter, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
I have to tell folks that we really had some conversation that rocked, and we're going to share some of that with them tonight. I asked this question, folks, before that break, and I want you to think about it again. Would you concede that planet Earth is not what it used to be? Would you concede that planet Earth is much different today than it was a long, long time ago? Would you concede that probably the Earth of the far distant future is going to be very different from what it is today? Okay, that's pretty easy. We can wrap our minds around that because we've all watched the History Channel and Discovery Channel. But would you concede, or would you at least think about, the possibility that the Earth right now is not even right now what you think it is? That is entirely possible. And Walter and I had some real interesting discussion about that today. We're going to be talking tonight about one of the ancient legends, one of the great legends of the world. It has to do with a lost continent, not Atlantis, Lemuria, or some people call it the lost continent of Mu. It's said to have occupied most of what is today the Pacific Ocean. And the stories that we have about Lemuria consist mainly of small little bits and scraps of information, primarily from the lore of native peoples on both sides of the Pacific Ocean. And then, of course, there are tons and tons of speculators and overactive imaginations that have written all kinds of things about Lemuria. The fact is, you've never met a Lemurian face to face. I never have. At least I don't think we have. And the fact is, we don't know anybody that actually has met real, live, living Lemurians. So whatever we write or say about Lemuria today is pretty much speculative. So the question is, did it ever really exist? If it did, there should be some trace evidence of it, some left behinds, some remnants, some evidence somewhere. Does it exist? So the question again is, what is the truth when it comes to Mu or Lemuria? What's the truth? Is there any reality in these legends of this massive lost supercontinent? I've asked Walter to join me because, and we'll just give a little teaser here. Walter is doing some pretty heavy research and investigation into some matters having to do with the book that he's writing. And we're not going to get into that because they're almost finished with the first draft of the book. And you'll soon enough, you'll be able to get the book. So we'll just say that there are some related matters that we talked about that sort of led us into this conversation that we're going to have tonight. Walter, one of the things about the legends of Lemuria that does crop up quite a bit has to do with the fact that California may be a remnant of what's left over from Lemuria. And that's kind of where we got started talking about all this today. So why don't you share with us what you know about that, and particularly about the Chumash Indians.
Well, for years, as I've talked about on, you know, I think this show and elsewhere, I've been into...
Walter, we can barely hear you. You're going to have to speak directly into your phone.
I'm having trouble hearing you, too. Is this better?
That's much better.
Okay. I have for years now been interested in, the last few years, I'm interested in looking into stories of ancient ruins in California, in Southern California specifically. I went over to Death Valley a couple of years back and investigated some of those. And I've published a book by Sesher Reed, who's been a guest on your program, a nonfiction book he's written called The Handprint of Atlas that also discusses this. So it's been an interest of mine. And my conclusion, based on all the stories you hear, is that there's definitely something to the idea that California was, I believe, probably the eastern edge of a lost civilization's territory. And you can find evidence of this in the stories of Death Valley that I've investigated myself and many others have, where the miners talked about seeing ancient ruins. Very specifically, high up in the mountains, they found moorings for ships that led into caverns of a city inside a mountain. Well, these what look like moorings for ships are high up in the mountains, which indicates that Death Valley was once covered by an inland sea. And this concept of the inland sea and California being an island or a chain of islands has long been associated with this part of the continent. And that would, you know, present a pretty good circumstantial argument for, you know, the idea of a lost continent or lost Lemuria. And also what Sesheri talks about in his book as far as the alleged Lemurian ruins that Robert Stanley has found in the Malibu and north into Point Magoo, that area of the California coast. We're talking what appear to be weather-worn, time-worn statues with the elongated ears like you see in Indonesia and snake heads and things like that. There's all sorts of evidence for it between what you can find out there when you go look in the right places, what others have found, and particularly in what you read about the legends of California. So the bottom line, you know, on that is that it makes perfect sense to me that there's something to it, particularly when you start getting into the ley line research and who else seemed to be aware of the ley lines. And that's where we get into, as you mentioned, the Chumash. Who, in their lore, they occupied the what we call the Channel Islands here in California, Catalina and all those, and they are known as, I think, the only, maybe one of the only, seagoing tribes in North America, native tribes, and they're known for building these canoes that are identical to a canoe design in Hawaii and other parts of the South Pacific. And so, and they talk about, you know, having worshipped these ancient gods that occupied the islands and this oceanic world.
I'll tell you something else, Walter, that I found out today after you and I talked, and that is that in the Chumash language, many of the words end with mu.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's sort of like in Romanian, it's very, very common to have names end in escu, like Ceausescu, yeah. And in Spanish with Vich, Popovich, mm-hmm. You know. We don't have that in English, but that's very common in other languages. And in the Chumash language, M-U, or mu, ends many of their words in their language. Mu is supposedly the name of the continent. Lemuria was a name given to it later by writers.
They even have a place name in their own history and lore called Limu, which, you know, I believe it's L-I-M-U. And, you know, gosh, we're talking about Lemuria. You know, there's of course, there's Lima, Peru, but this is Limu. And, you know, maybe in, you know, the official court of academia, it's, you know, that doesn't hold any water. But when you get out there and you're looking around and you're really studying these things where the rubber meets the road, you get a pretty good intuitive feel for when you're, you know, onto something there. And to me, the fact that with all these other things, they have a place name that they use called Limu, you know, that's kind of a smoking gun.
You know, of course, when I said, is there any evidence that it actually exists, we have, yes, we do have evidence, various bits of evidence. But they're sort of shredded. The evidence is, there's not that much of it, but some of it is pretty good. For instance, you have the testimony of an explorer and archaeologist by the name of Sir Aurel Stein. In 1907, he went through a part of the world. It's Dunhuang. It's a small desert town on the border of northern Tibet. And at that place, there was a Taoist monk that in about 1900, 7 years before, had found a hidden library inside of a cliff that was just honeycombed with caves. And there were all kinds of information, books and writings in languages that could not be read. And when Sir Aurel Stein went through there in 1907, he heard about it, and he talked this monk into letting him see this treasure trove of artifacts and books and so forth. A lot of it he couldn't read, he couldn't understand, but he saw a map. There was a map, a very ancient map, that showed parts of a massive continent in the Pacific. And so that would be one little shred of evidence. Now, there are people that would say, oh, well, you know, it was all fictitious. And I'm not so sure about that, because you may recall the Piri Reis map.
Mm-hmm.
The Piri Reis map, based on much, much more ancient maps, showed the edge of the continent of Antarctica long before that continent had been officially discovered. And it shows it accurately. So, you know, apparently at some point there was a massive continent out in the Pacific. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to, for those who are watching on KSS TV, I'm going to put up a map. This map comes from a publication by the Rosicrucians of San Jose, California. And who knows, as I said, there's so much speculation, who knows how accurate this is. But this is a map that shows what they think Lemuria would have been shaped like and where it would have been located. I've seen other maps done by other individuals that seem to show the same thing, pretty much the same thing. And it's massive. It goes basically from Indonesia, Japan, all the way across the Pacific, and is part of what we call the United States of America. Today it forms California and Oregon. And, I mean, it's just, it's huge. It's huge. This map also shows the presumed location of Atlantis. Now, how accurate this is, who really knows? I mean, I don't suppose anybody knows. But this is based on whatever ancient information they have come across. And it at least gives us some idea. Now, what's interesting about this map, Walter, is, and for those that are watching on our TV channel, I've traced it in green. And those trace marks in green, yeah, I know I didn't trace it really too well, but you get the idea. That's the Ring of Fire. And it's as if someone took a cookie cutter and just cut that out of the ocean there. And if you look at the topography of the ocean floor in that area, you'll see these deep crevices and you'll see high ridges that form basically that outline that is marked on the map. And they call that the Ring of Fire. The stories about Lemuria are varied, but one that seems to be, you find it more consistently than the others, is that the king of Lemuria was warned by the gods of impending doom. He tried to warn his people wouldn't listen. Life was good, everything was wonderful. They didn't believe what he had to say. A handful of folks did, and they began to evacuate. And what's interesting is that there's a story, Walter, you're in California. There's a story that some of the evacuees made it to what today we call Mount Shasta. And they went inside the mountain, and there they were safe from the impending doom. And this impending doom that we speak about, well, this impending doom is, I think, maybe even documented a little bit by National Geographic. I have it here. This was published October the 24th, 2007. Ancient Cataclysm, Rearranged Pacific Map, written by Julian Ryle for National Geographic News. And this is a story, they say it happened 50 million years ago, but it's a story how a large mid-ocean ridge known as the Izanagi Ridge collapsed and initiated a chain reaction of geological events. Maybe the collapse of Lemuria. We'll be back right after this break. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and to my guest, Walter Bosley. And Walter, when we went away, I was just making mention of the fact that National Geographic News reported that there had been some kind of horrendous cataclysm that shook the Pacific and basically gave us the world in the form that it's in today. Now, I want to, the pictures that we talked about this afternoon, I want to share those with folks. I'll describe them for those of you who are listening. Those of you who are watching will see them. And I want to make sure that you understand, folks, that you're about to see something that is as unexplained when it comes right down to hard nails explanations, to the best of my knowledge, it's as unexplained as UFOs. We can see UFOs, we can videotape them, but when it comes down to hard nails explanations of what they are, and where they come from and who's driving them, those are all still mysteries. We have some pretty good speculations, but real hard information is real hard to come by. What you're about to see, what you're about to see is, as to the best of my knowledge, as unexplained and possibly as unexplainable, but it is mysterious. And then and Walter, I want to get you to comment on it, and I've got some pretty interesting stuff that even you haven't seen, but we did talk about it.
Okay.
All right. The first thing I want to show is the picture from the NOAA satellite. Now, this was taken in 2001, December the 7th, 2001. That's a picture of the Pacific Ocean, and you see some concentric circles. Those are not artifacts of the camera. The NOAA satellite was picking up some kind of radiating energy in the ocean. And you might notice that to the east of those circles, to the east, you look right at the center, and by the way, the center is not a circle. Look closely and you'll see that it has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 sides. To the east of it is the state line between California and Oregon. All right, now the second picture, what they've done is they've taken a picture that has the topography, that what the ocean floor looks like, and they've put it underneath this picture, and an interesting thing emerges. In the center of those concentric circles, there appears to be some sort of structures. What could they be? Well, when you zoom in on it, turns out it's three pyramids. And it looks like, now I grant you this is very pixely, but it looks like there's some sort of complex around those three pyramids. And if you take a picture of the Giza Plateau, orient it the same as this so that the small pyramid in the Giza Plateau is in the upper right, just like this, you'll find out it's lined up identically. What do you think about this, Walter?
That was pretty stunning when you showed it to me earlier today. Just as you said, the blatant similarity with the layout of the pyramids and the Giza Plateau. You know, as I said earlier, it indicates that there is I can't remember the word I used earlier, but it has to do with their method of technology. This is a sign that they used the same technology as whatever was used at Giza. If you follow the theories of folks like Joseph Farrell and Christopher Dunn, that the Giza Pyramid Complex was definitely some type of energy station. Which I do, and the fact that...
Oh, and by the way, both of those gentlemen have been guests on the show and have talked about the Giza Plateau being some type of an energy station. Let me ask you something, though, Walter. There are people who say that there's a grid of these things all around the world emanating energy. And we have a photograph that you and I talked about from the Naval Research Laboratory. Mm-hmm. And it shows a wider view, and it is absolutely fascinating. It's a black and white photograph of the same energy swirls. I'm going to call these vortexes, but look, maybe they are, maybe they're not. But there's some pretty interesting observations to be made here. For instance, we're not now looking at only one big swirl of energy out there. We have the central big eye of the storm, if you will. It's not a storm, but the big one. But then around it, we can see 1, 2, 3, 4 other swirls of energy. A really big one. And it's out in the Pacific. The one that I labeled number one is over near Japan. Number two is out in the ocean off the coast of Alaska. Number three, some of you Canadians maybe can look at that map and tell me where it's located in Canada. It's that's up in Canada somewhere. And then number four is located directly over the Four Corners area of the United States. Now, again, this was 12/7/2001. Naval Research Laboratory photograph number 19002. Walter, what do you make of that?
Oh, I'm sorry. My connection was kind of low, so...
Yeah, what do you make of this? We got the big swirl of energy out in the Pacific, and then we've got these four other swirls of energy, one of them over the Four Corners area, one of them in Canada, the other two, one of them off the coast of Japan, one of them off the coast of Alaska. What do you make of this? I mean, when you look at this photograph and you see all these swirls of energy, what is this?
Well, I personally believe that this Lemurian technology was and remains plugged into the world grid power system of, you know, the longitudinal electricity and the energy that is generated through this ley line system that we like to talk about. And it's interesting, when I say plugged in, their very construction, you know, we build a building and then we put an apparatus inside that will generate energy. But the building itself is, you know, just the structure to house it. Whereas they, the Lemurians and whoever built the Giza complex in Egypt and these other kind of places, their very architecture itself was a technology. And I think that's, to me, clearly displayed through the fact that we're seeing this energy emanate from what is essentially what we would call ruins.
I'm going to show something, a couple of somethings next, and then we'll get back to talking about these energy vortices, and we'll talk about how maybe that might have something to do, ley lines may have something to do with that, and so forth. But I want to put the picture back up again, the black and white picture from the Naval Research Laboratory. Okay. Now, I want to show you something, folks. I want to show you two things. The area that I'm highlighting right now is, I can't draw very well, but that's the Four Corners area. Now, it's called the Four Corners area because you can see the state lines form right angles and create four corners. That's where four states, the corners of four states, meet. So you have Arizona, New Mexico, Colorado, and Utah. And right over this Four Corners area is a swirl of energy. Now, in addition, I want you to notice the state line that separates California from Oregon. Okay? Now, just 45 miles south of that state line, sitting in California, is a place called Mount Shasta. Mount Shasta is the place where it is rumored that Lemurians took shelter. And there have been people who have been in that area since the 1900s. Who have written accounts of having run into Lemurians, people who live inside the Earth and they go in and out at Mount Shasta. Is that the truth? Well, I don't know. What I do know to be the truth is that we're looking at a very, very strange photograph here that appears to show energy emanations, a very large one from out in the Pacific, and four smaller ones around it. There may be more. There may be more. This picture doesn't go far enough south for us to see any more. But in what we see in the picture, we see there are four swirls of energy. And once again, let me point those out to you. There's one over near Japan. There's one up near Alaska. There's one over Canada. And there's one in the Four Corners area. Now, the reason I mentioned the Four Corners area is because I want to show you something. This plays into what we talked about last night on the show, Walter. I asked our guest last night about Sedona, Arizona, and she talked about how it was a very special place, almost a magical place, that there are portals and vortex, energy vortexes all over the place around Sedona. And so when I looked at that photograph from the Naval Research Laboratory, I decided, let's see what happens here. Let's see, where is Sedona in Arizona? And let's see how those energy swirls play into the Sedona area. Now, again, just to kind of orient you a little bit, let me point out the Four Corners area. The Four Corners area I'm marking in green. And so there's New Mexico and Colorado, Arizona, and Utah. All right, now what happens if we overlay those swirls? When we come back from this break, I'm going to show you something quite amazing. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. My guest is Walter Bosley, and we're talking about these really weird photographs in relationship to, is it possibly something left over from Lemuria? Now, before we went to break, I was showing a picture of Arizona, a picture of the state map of Arizona. And what I've done is I've marked on this map where Sedona is. Sedona is basically due north of Phoenix, and kind of in the north central part of the state. If we take those energy lines, and my artwork is not very good, but folks, take a look at what happens. If you take those energy lines emanating from the Four Corners area and the ones coming out of the Pacific, they intersect right over Sedona. So you have energy lines coming from the northeast, and you have energy lines coming from the west, colliding over Sedona. Is that what causes the portals and vortices in Sedona? I don't know. But it is at least enough to make you raise an eyebrow and say, that's interesting. Maybe that's the answer. Maybe it is. I don't know. But let's get back to talking about Mount Shasta and Lemuria and the Chumash Indians. Walter, you and I have been out on South Mountain, and we did a little documentary of our trip there, and we found spirals that were carved into the rocks. Jeff Woolline has told us that those mark portals. And the ones that point upward mark a portal in the sky. And the ones that point downward, where the spiral ends pointing downward, those mark portals in the ground. Well, last night I had a Native American shaman on, and I asked her about that, and she said that's exactly right. But she added, the ones that point up and end going to the left are female. The ones that point up and going to the right are male. So to the left, female. To the right, male. Same when they're pointed at the ground. If they point to the left, then that's female. If they point to the right, it's male. And she explained that a male portal is one where you travel from here out to the universe or from here into the earth. And the female are the arriving portals. Okay, so if it's in the sky, it's coming from out in the universe to here. If it's in the ground, it's coming from inside the earth up to here. But she said that's correct. Interesting that those spirals look so much like these energy lines. Are you with me, Walter?
Oh, yes. No, I'm agreeing with you. I just didn't say it out loud.
Yeah,
you're absolutely right. When you see these things, you know, and now you see the image that you're showing on screen here, it has got to be referring to either these same round images you're seeing of the energy on the map, or even the spirals of the nodal points of the ley lines, which are also in these areas. What I'm seeing when I look at the image you've got up there and I look at my map of the ley lines, spirals and such, I'm seeing where, again, we're seeing, and of course it's circumstantial, but again we're seeing evidence that this civilization knew full well about this planetary energy system, and they were definitely tapping into it, because there's more than just a physical overlap. They've got to be working in conjunction with each other. And the portal aspect is really quite fascinating.
Well, you know, one of the things you and I talked about today was, is it possible that what we're looking at when we look at this NOAA photograph, is it possible that what we're seeing here is maybe some super top secret technology of ours that maybe is doing this on the bottom of the ocean?
Sure.
The reason that I don't think it is because of what's in the circle. What's in the circle, it's always possible that our military may have gone down and built pyramids on the bottom of the ocean. Maybe they did. I don't know.
Co-opted what was there.
I'm sorry?
I'm sorry to interrupt you. Or co-opted what was there.
Well, that's a possibility as well. But I don't really think they went down there and built pyramids and built this complex around the pyramids. Maybe they did. I don't know. It's a possibility. But then when you look at that Naval Research Laboratory photo and you see that right over next to, it's sort of between, right up next to Japan and China, you've got one of those swirls. I don't think they went into their waters and did it. Up in Canada, I don't think the U.S. military went up there and built any energy pyramids or whatever. Maybe they did. Anything's possible, I guess, but it just doesn't seem likely to me that that's the case. Now, the question I have, when you look at this Naval Research Lab picture, we see that there are pyramids. Well, we actually, in the previous pictures, we saw that there are pyramids in the center of the big swirl that's out there in the Pacific Ocean. Okay. Now my question is, what's causing the energy waves over the Navajo Nation. There's got to be some artifacts up there somewhere, that like those pyramids out in the ocean. And that's got to be true in Canada as well. If you have that energy emanating from an area, something is causing it. So there's got to be, if you get back in the hills there somewhere, you've got to be able to find something that's causing this. Do you think, Walter, there may be pyramids undiscovered back in these areas?
Oh, yeah. You know, you've got, there are those who believe that there's Pyramid Lake in Nevada, and some people feel that the what looks like a little hill or mountain is actually a very, very old pyramid. And by the way, according to Sesheri, the ley line passes right through that. And as a matter of fact, that particular ley line going through Pyramid Lake in Nevada comes out of the one that goes right through Mount Shasta. And you have the Cahokia Mound, which is one of the biggest pieces of evidence. Cahokia Mound is actually, I think, the third or fourth largest pyramid in the world. Now, just because it's not built up as high as other pyramids anymore, it gets called a mound by academia. But we know about those guys and what their agenda is. Cahokia Mound in Illinois is essentially a pyramid. So between, you know, you've got Pyramid Lake, you've got, you know, the Cahokia Mound, and there's other locations where there are very suspiciously pyramidal-looking objects, you know, that are confused for hills, called mountains or whatever. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if you were to go into the Navajo country and the other places you circled up there and, you know, you were to find more of these pyramidal shapes.
The whole thing about pyramids is a mystery to me. I don't understand. I will accept the fact that they emit energy. I don't understand why or how. You're familiar probably with Samir Osmanigic, who is the guy who discovered the pyramids in Bosnia. And they have measured. And I can't remember. He said every 5 minutes or every 2 minutes or something like that, there's a burst of energy that comes out of this one pyramid. And they've measured it. And they've used special photography to photograph it. So I understand it happens. I just don't understand how or why. When we come back, we're going to dive off into this a little deeper. And then in a little bit, we'll open the phone lines for you. We'll be back. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Walter Bosley, and we're talking about Lemuria. I cannot say definitively that what we're looking at is energy emanating from ancient Lemurian sites. I can say we're looking at energy emanating from a total of 5 sites on that one picture. What kind of energy? Who's doing it? It's anybody's guess, but it's interesting that in the eye of the biggest swirl of energy, there are 3 pyramids on the ocean floor. And it would suggest to me the possibility that this is Lemurian technology still working. Walter, the Lemurians are said to have had 7 colonies. Mm-hmm. And they traveled all the way across what is today the United States and into what was Atlantis on the other ocean. there are people that seem to have some information that they got into a bit of a trade war with the Atlanteans. But we hear a lot of stuff about Lemurians. We hear, well, they were reptilian. We hear they were alien. We hear they were etheric. What do you, is there anything we know actually about these Lemurians?
Well, they seem to, as we mentioned the Chumash earlier, what we do know seems to turn up in the lore and the language of various cultures. They seem to have left, like the Atlanteans, whoever they actually were, they've left an imprint, a fingerprint of themselves in architecture, in language, in the lore. Case in point, you mentioned the photo that you put up of the close-up photo of the pyramids under the water in the Pacific, right?
That's right.
And to the left of it, the upper left of that, you see the structures, which you noted when we talked earlier, that it looked like a complex of buildings beside these pyramids, correct?
That's what it looks like to me. However, the disclaimer being, it is pixely.
It's true, but here's what's interesting. If you refer to, and I would refer everybody listening to this show, if you haven't already, to read the classic book by Colonel James Churchward called The Lost Continent of Mu, which I'm looking at right now. And in my edition, on page 178, there's an illustration, two illustrations. They're hand-drawn from original stone plates found in Grapevine Canyon in Nevada. And apparently these were dedicated in the language of the natives. The dedication said, "This temple is erected to the memory of Mu, the motherland of man, which has been submerged with myriads of souls," according to, you know, this research. And what's interesting is the pictograms on this stone tablet depict what is called the layouts of various temple buildings. And I'll tell you, there's one in particular, but in a general sense, but also with one in particular, look remarkably like what appears in that photograph that you've posted of the close-up of the underwater pyramids. It looks remarkably like what I'm looking at on this tablet from Grapevine Canyon that was allegedly dedicated to the memory of Lemuria. So that's just one example that I'm talking about, how their fingerprint and the reality of them just keep popping up in different ways. And it doesn't even begin to touch the linguistic evidence. You know, words that show up in South America that, you know, there's no way they could have got them because they're any other way. But they're just like it's the exact same word for the exact same item, on the other side of the Pacific. In Indonesia, you know, for example, and then there's also the whole thing about the sweet potato, the yam, you know, and how they were not, you know, indigenous to the one area, and yet there they are, and that's evidence that somebody brought them across. But this is just an example of the idea that I'm talking about, that they pop up in places that you least expect.
I want to point out something else, Walter, that I noticed on the Naval Research Laboratory photograph. Mm-hmm. On that photograph, apparently the Naval Research Laboratory has drawn some green lines. And if you take a look at those lines, what you see is there is a triangle drawn between three of those swirls. One of the points of the triangle is in the Four Corners area. The other one is off the coast of Alaska. The other one is in Canada. So you draw that triangle, and from each of those points, draw a line upward until they intersect, and you get a pyramid. That pyramid, the peak of it, is right over Washington State. And that's where James Gilliland has his ranch, where they see all those UFOs all the time. And I don't know that there's a connection to that. I just find it a bit curious. Now, it is entirely possible, and folks, we'll find out when I open the telephone lines, it's entirely possible that there's someone sitting out there that has the military knowledge of what that is and can explain to us that we're not looking at energy coming off of ancient artifacts, really large artifacts. That's entirely possible, and I'm going to give you the opportunity to do that. If you know what that is, and you know for sure, absolutely for certain, that that's modern technology that's doing that, I'd like to hear from you. Now, whatever your questions or comments may be about all of this, I want to hear from you. But more specifically, if you know for sure that that's modern technology that's causing this, I'd like to hear from you, and we'd like to know, okay, so what is it? All right? So I'm going to open up the telephone lines and invite our audience to call. And the telephone number, ladies and gentlemen, is 623-444-5889. And we'll get the TV channel corrected there. 623-444-5889. Or toll free at 888-223-4599. I'm interested in what you know about the Lemurians. And you might say, well, I don't want to call in because I don't know it for sure, but I've read it. Well, that's good enough. Let's talk about Lemurians. And is it possible that we might be looking at here in these photographs some trace evidence that they did exist? Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin?
Yes, you're live on the air. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, hi, Kevin. This is Donna from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada.
Hi, how are you?
Very good.
Good.
Thank you. Going to back, if you can bring your Naval Research Laboratory picture back up.
Okay, it's coming back up. You should be seeing it in a few seconds. There is a few seconds of delay, folks.
Yeah.
You need to know that.
Okay. Right, I see it now. Well, you wanted to know where the circles, or you said circle in Canada was, but before I discuss that, actually I have noticed another circle that's in Canada. There is one in the province of Alberta. And it's located just under the where it says Tory at the end of the word laboratory.
Yeah, maybe. I saw that. I'm not real sure. I can't tell because of that label being there.
Right. What is making me think that there is one there is that you'll notice that two of the green lines come to a point there.
Mm-hmm.
And so that one's in Alberta, and the other one is right on the border of the province of Saskatchewan and Manitoba. But I couldn't tell you what's there. I don't think there's anything really significant there.
Mm-hmm. You know, are you saying that it's probably a wilderness area?
Either wilderness or farming.
Mm-hmm.
But, because I don't recall any, major cities or anything or centers in that area.
Well, that would not surprise me, because like that Four Corners area, right where that's located, there's not anything major happening there. Mm-hmm. There's no big cities. And, on the Arizona side, probably the closest thing would be Window Rock. And on the New Mexico side, probably Farmington. I don't know about Colorado or Utah, what's there in their corners. But these are very, like Window Rock is a really small town. Really, really small. And it's mainly, it's in the Navajo Nation, and it's mainly wide open spaces. And so that wouldn't surprise me. But, you know, here's what I wonder. Because we see those pyramids out in the Pacific, I wonder if back up in the mountains there somewhere, or maybe under the dirt, there is a pyramid.
Oh, in the mountains in the Arizona area?
Well, in all of these places, because of the pyramids being in the one that's in the Pacific, I wonder if maybe there's a pyramid in each one of those swirls of energy.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting. Very interesting.
Well, what do you think? Do you think this is evidence of Lemuria, leftover technology of Lemuria, or is this something else?
Well, I really don't have any ideas as to what it is, but I think it is very interesting and coincidental that this big area of concentric circles is located pretty much center of where you drew the supposed location of the continent of Lemuria.
Yeah, let me put that back up. The concentric circles, I could be off a little bit, but I think the concentric circles actually would be somewhere right around the area that I'm highlighting now.
Okay.
Yeah. And see, there, Mount Shasta would be right about east of there, and then
right.
Four Corners area would be somewhere just south of there, and then Canada, and one here, and one back over in here. I think if we had a photograph that showed it, I think we might find some others to the south that are just not in the picture.
Yeah, yeah. But seriously look at that area under where the word laboratory is, and I'm pretty sure that's another concentric circle. And I'd also be interested, because I, you know, don't have, there's no way I can copy this picture, but it would be interesting to find out what the longitude and latitudes of these areas are.
You know, I'll tell you what I'll do. In this week's K-Files e-zine, I'll put the link to this page. If you go looking for this on Google, it will take you forever because...
Yeah, I've just gone through 32 pages.
Yeah. Well, when
Google, and I still didn't find it.
Well, the link to this, and I'm not kidding you, the link is about 4 or 5 lines of typewriting.
Oh.
And so it's buried way down in the thousands of pages of Google. But it's there, and I'll put the link in the K-Files e-zine this week, and people can go take a look. There's a whole lot more information and more pictures, and it'll help you do your own research on it. Hey, Donna, thanks for the call.
Hey, thanks very much, Kevin.
All right. 623-444-5889, and the telephone line is open. I would love to hear from you. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? You know what? Cockpit trouble. I did the same thing the other night. I pushed the wrong button for the wrong line.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. Your first name and where are you calling from?
Yeah, it's Terry from Ohio.
Hi, Terry. Are you watching your screen right now?
Yeah.
You see how red I am? I'm embarrassed because I can't run a phone line.
Yeah, that's okay. I was wondering, you said appears to have pyramids down there in the same configuration as Orion Belt.
No, I said they look like the same as the Giza Plateau, which people say is in the configuration of the Orion Belt. But specifically, it looks like a carbon copy of the Giza Plateau, to me.
So,
what do you think, Walter?
So could we assume, would they see in that part of the worst, would they see Orion's Belt in the same position at the same time as the Giza Plateau?
Oh, I don't think so. But I don't know. I'm not an astronomer, but I would assume not.
Yeah.
I mean, look, in Australia, they see constellations we don't see in North America.
Right.
So,
just wondering, now that they found that new, I guess, is what is it, Aztec, because it's older than Maya, that village that they're uncovering that pretty much shows the universe to date here, or 2012, whatever the alignment to the center galaxy. Did I get that right? You was talking with Jerry.
Well, it's not Aztec. It's pre-Mayan. It's older than Mayan, but they don't know exactly who it is.
Okay. Yeah, because I was wondering. You said that comes around. We do this every, 26,000 years?
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a theory out there that we believe that last alignment in Egypt was 13,000 years ago. I don't know if this was said on your show before or not. And they're pointing to a halfway point. And so, and then, we get this other thing, you know. So, you know, just got a lot of things besides the Mayan calendar. I mean.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Point your finger.
The thing is, we don't even know what date it is.
Hard to ignore.
Yeah, see, our calendars have been so messed up, we don't even really know what the real date is.
That's true.
I don't know. But I don't know. I'll put the picture back up of the pyramids. And if you go look at the Giza Plateau, And turn your picture of the Giza Plateau so that the smallest pyramid is diagonally up to the right. It lines up like this, and and this is on the bottom of the Pacific. So that's to me a pretty weird deal.
Yep, it sure is.
All right, Terry, thanks for the call.
Yep, thanks, Cap.
You bet. Walter, you still with me?
Yes, I am.
You mentioned James Churchward.
Yes.
This book, The Lost Continent of Mu, believe it or not, folks, is a book that I read. It's one of the first books I ever read that was not a novel. And I read it in junior high. Oh, yeah, I read textbooks, but I was forced to do that for school. But I'm talking about, just go check out a book and read it. I checked it out of the school library and read it, and I was fascinated by this thing. And it's not big. It's a small book. But it's packed with information. James Churchward was a pretty interesting guy. He spent a great deal of his life over in India. And while he was there, he was initiated into certain Eastern esoteric schools of thought. And he was taught how to read these ancient tablets. And he was told many fascinating stories about ancient history. And then he wrote five books. And the first one is The Lost Continent of Mu. M-U, and which, by the way, happens to be the name of a letter in the Greek alphabet. And if you look at my website, you'll see that letter is in yellow, big letter, Mu, the lost continent of Mu. Same thing as Lemuria, except, Edgar Cayce, Walter. Edgar Cayce made a distinction between Mu and Lemuria. or Lemuria.
Yes, he did.
What do you know about that?
One of them, oh boy, off the top of my head, I'm getting them mixed up. It was either what he called Mu or Lemuria was actually over towards in the Indian Ocean between Indonesia and India. And
yeah, you're very, very muffled. We can barely hear you.
Edgar Cayce, is this better?
Yeah.
Okay. Edgar Cayce had one of them, whichever one he called Mu or Lemuria, he had both of them. He had it placed, I believe, over in the Indian Ocean between Indonesia all the way over to India.
Uh-huh.
More in that part of the world.
Well, the Thule Society, T-H-U-L-E, at thule.org, that's where their map shows Lemuria.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons it gets called Lemuria is because of the lemurs. At least this is one of the things that I read. A lemur is an animal, and you can find them in the wild in places like Indonesia and Sri Lanka. And it's an animal, and allegedly they populated that continent, and that's how they got their name. Let's go back to the telephone caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Hello, caller. I've got the right button pushed, and we cannot hear the caller. All right. The thing about the lemurs that is pretty interesting is that we found an occult reference to them as well today, and we'll talk about that. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. It's Stefan from Quebec City.
Hi, Stefan. Are you willing to hang on through the break?
I sure am, Kevin.
All right, hang in there. We'll be back, folks, right after this, so don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking this evening with Walter Bosley, and we have Stefan on the line. Stefan, sorry we had to cut you off like that, but go ahead.
Well, it's fine. It allowed me to finish up my dishes. I was wondering, perhaps one clue to the existence of Lemuria has to do with the names of the oceans themselves. How old are the Appalachians, Atlantic and Pacific?
I really don't know. Of course, with Atlantic and Atlantis, there's an obvious sounding connection there. They're very close.
I read somewhere, this was a number of years ago, that the Lemurians were, well, basically more Pacific in their temperament in comparison to the Atlanteans.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know that the Pacific Ocean was named by the Spanish explorers, I believe.
Yeah, Walter, you're going to have to speak into your phone again.
I said that I seem to recall that the Pacific Ocean was named by the Spanish explorers of the 15th and 16th centuries.
Oh, so only 500 years ago.
Yeah, so it's that recent as far as the Pacific goes.
Oh,
yeah.
So I guess that whole area was basically a no-name body of water, I guess, prior to that date. Is that correct?
Well, if Lemuria exists, Lemuria, if it existed, the continent of Mu, there wasn't much Pacific Ocean because it covered most of it.
Right.
Yeah, but I mean, 500 right, years ago isn't that long. I mean, that's almost probably at least 8,000 years of having the water there.
Well,
incorrect, and it was probably called something else by either the Lemurian civilization or the Asian civilizations, but the term Pacific that you asked about comes from the Spanish.
Oh, okay. I wasn't aware of that. Great show.
All right, man. Thanks for the call.
Yep.
Yeah. Whoever the Lemurians were, we apparently their books, their writings have not come down to us, apparently. And maybe they still exist. If they do still exist, they are either well hidden or well guarded. All right. Go ahead, Walter.
It's believed just what you described. It is believed that that it is in the hands of the Tibetans, and they are guarding them and they are hiding them.
Well, it may be then that this archaeologist, Sir Aurel Stein, that went through Tibet in 1907 and saw this treasure trove of ancient books and the map, maybe that's what he saw. Maybe he was looking at the records of the Lemurians. Could be. All right, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, it's Brian from Burnaby, Kevin.
Yeah.
I just took a look at the intersection of radiating power line that you thought came from Canada. And if you look at the Saskatchewan-Manitoba border and you go, 60 kilometers south, you come to Minot Air Force Base. And if you go, let's say, another 70 kilometers east of that, you come to the town of Rugby, North Dakota. And right below that, according to my atlas, is the geographic center of North America.
Interesting. The geographic center of North America. Do you suspect that it's speculation, but do you suspect there may be a buried pyramid there somewhere?
I really wouldn't know. I don't even know how they would arrive at that. Perhaps it's just sort of like a summation of all the outline of North America and then, geographic balance. But I found it just interesting that it should be 60... kilometers or so south of where the Saskatchewan-Manitoba border is.
Yeah, that is interesting. Well, let me ask you this. When we look at this photograph that's got these swirls of some kind of radiating energy, do you get the feeling, the sense that it's modern technology that's causing it, or do you get the sense that this is some sort of ancient technology causing it?
Well, it would be interesting to if there were other... I see this was taken in 2001.
Mm-hmm.
If there were other previous satellite photographs, it would be interesting to compare those to see whether if it appears on previous ones. I wouldn't imagine that it would be outputting power continuously, so... If it was on previous ones showed the same pattern, I would imagine that would be an ancient or a permanent technology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see what you mean. I don't know. I do know that these photographs appeared on the internet on quite a number of sites when they first came out, and I also know that this site from which I got these is the only one I could find them on now. Now, there may be some others, but they just don't proliferate as they once did. But that's happening with a lot of UFO sites. That's happening with alternative information sites. They're disappearing rapidly. And I don't know if folks know that, but it is happening. Okay, man, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you, Kevin.
All right, very interesting. 623-444-5889 is the number to call, or 888-223-4599. As always, if you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can send me a flash message. And you do that by going to my website, click where it says flash message. You'll see it. Just scroll down. You'll see it. And you can send me a flash message. All right, back to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, Kevin, it's Mike from Kentucky.
Hi, Mike.
You're talking about a subject that's near and dear to my heart here. Being a member of AMARC for all those years, I've read and seen the pictures that you showed in of Atlantis and Lemuria and all that earlier in the show, but unfortunately, this picture has been freezing up on me all night, and it's frozen right now on the main source of the center out there in the Pacific,
mm-hmm.
where apparently the pyramids are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's an interesting photograph, especially when it points to Sedona as one of those and up into western Ontario. And all of these are the so-called power centers of the South Pacific, you know.
So what is it? Walter and I want to know, what is it?
I think that what it is now it's just an opinion, mind you, but based upon the history of Lemuria and how it went down, and the Hawaiian Islands, the Samoan, and all those other islands are fingertips of that once vast continent, that these are the main temples. And more than likely, the crystals that they use for power production are being triggered on somehow, and they're producing this.
You know what would be interesting? Walter, what do you think about this? Let me get your opinion on this. If we take this date of 12/7/2001, so December 7, 2001, we take that date and see if we can find any tests of extreme low frequency at that time. You know, if they were doing any, because it seems to me that back around 2000 and 2001, we were reading about ELF tests being conducted, lots of ELF tests for long-distance communication underwater with the submarines. So it would be interesting to see if perhaps there were any ELF tests being done. Not that these radiations of energy that we're looking at would be ELF, but maybe they activated the crystals you're talking about.
Oh, that's an interesting concept. That's, I could see where that would cause some very interesting results that might start making these things pop up on imagery and that's very interesting.
If those ELF tests were being done, and I'm not talking about anything classified here. I mean, you remember, don't you, Mike, when we were reading about the Navy conducting all those ELF tests?
Yes.
Yeah. So, but it would be interesting to see if on the 7th of December 2001, if there were any ELF tests being done. If there were, and this satellite just happened to snap the picture at the right time, we may be looking at the energy crystals that you talked about, Michael.
Yep.
Sort of getting tickled by the ELF and going to work, coming back to life.
Well, you know, they work on frequency. And if that frequency was finally triggered, then you could be getting, because of the semicircle, you know, like dropping a rock in a pond, the waves go out, you know, symmetrically. And one other bit of trivia here to let you think about. That particular date was my 37th wedding anniversary.
Oh, so that's what caused this.
Yep, guilty.
All right, here's another thing, though, that I wonder. Since that time, that whole ring of fire, has it become more active?
Well,
and you know, I don't know. It would be good research, wouldn't it?
Yeah. The whole ring of fire all around the Pacific is becoming more and more active all the time. The History Channel is constantly talking about that.
Yeah, but it'd be interesting to see if that's the trigger date.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you have any friends up there in oceanography, you might could query them on that.
I actually don't have any friends in oceanography.
Mm.
Not to my knowledge.
Right.
There may be some listening to the show, but I'm not aware of it.
Right. Maybe Walter.
Not that I know of.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad
maybe
that you're there, and is with all the problems that I've had tonight, because this is one show that I really looked forward to hearing, and something's interfered with it all night long, and I just get bits and pieces. But I'm glad that I could get in and at least, you know, offer some kind of suggestion.
All right, man. I appreciate you calling.
Okay.
All right.
You take care, both of you.
Bye-bye. All right. Bye-bye.
Well, that brings up a good point. I've never had trouble hearing you or with the audio whenever I've been on here in the past, but tonight, you know, we're experiencing that, so...
Are you surprised, Walter?
No.
It's some of your old buddies and my old buddies, maybe. But we'll see. We'll get through it. All right, the telephone number is 623-444-5889 or 888-223-4599. Look, I didn't, folks, let's just talk about these photographs here. I didn't invent them. They came from the government. Their photographs. We'll be back after this break. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're on final approach. That means we have just a few minutes left in tonight's broadcast. And if you have a comment or a question, the telephone number is 623-444-5889 or toll free at 888-223-4599. We have time for one more quick call. So if you've been trying to get in, now's the time, okay? Walter, you've done a lot of research about ley lines, especially out in your part of the world, and very possibly you are living on a remnant of Lemuria. How does this stuff that we've talked about tonight, the pictures we've seen, how does it fit into or play into your research on ley lines?
Well... what I have been investigating for, 2 years now, going on 2 years, has uncovered a mystery. I'm in the process of solving a mystery, which I will go into in great detail at a future date, but I will say that how Lemuria is connected to it is primarily through the Chumash Indians, who are mostly located in the Santa Barbara area of California,
which is Southern California.
Southern California, yeah.
Yeah.
And they now, however, most of the tribes had an association or affiliation with the Chumash in a general way, but the specific ones we call Chumash are in the Santa Barbara area, and they. From my research, seem to have had quite a bit of knowledge about this ley line system. They hold sacred an area of the coast which we call, since the Spanish days, Point Conception, but which they refer to as a humqaq, H-U-M-Q-A-Q. And what this is, they call it the Gateway of the West. It's a gateway where the souls, spirits of the dead pass into the next dimension. And many people refer to it as the Montauk of the West. For those of you familiar with the lore that has to do with Montauk Point and all of that stuff, which Aleister Crowley visited, as a matter of fact, they refer to what we call Point Conception, or this Homkek, as a very sacred place. Now, what's interesting is it has an association with the ley line system that I have been studying, and the Chumash themselves seem to be or have a connection wherever these mysteries associated with the ley lines are to be found. And they have a very interesting background themselves. As I mentioned earlier, they once peopled the what we call the Channel Islands out here, and what we call Catalina Island was the main island in their religious system. They believe that their god, named Chinginichinch, resided on Catalina. And we're talking about a chthonic god.
What do you mean by chthonic? What does chthonic mean?
Chthonic refers to things specifically, you know, the gods, of course, but things that really harken back to the forgotten history of the Earth, really. And this is where H.P. Lovecraft was inspired for his stories of Cthulhu and the Cthulic mythology that he created. He had really done a lot of research into this ancient, what we call the antediluvian and older world that scholars call chthonic, refer to as chthonic. That's how old it is. It's interesting that the Chumash harken back to this era, and that what we're talking about is an era that is believed to be demonstrated in the ancient Hindu scriptures, the Mahabharata and such. And basically, the Mahabharata and the other ancient Hindu scriptures have been credited with telling the story of the war between Atlantis and Lemuria, but just in other terms, in their own language. But essentially, that's what the Mahabharata is about. It's about a war between two ancient civilizations that allegedly do not exist anymore. And, of course, as we said earlier, Edgar Cayce placed the original continent of Lemuria over in that part of the world. So you begin to see where all these connections come in. And of course, the Chumash here in California, I would say that they're similar to the Basques of Spain, being considered to be one of the inheritors of or the last caretakers of the vestiges of the Atlantean civilization. This is what the Chumash are in Southern California. For this area, this region, they are one of the holders of the last vestiges of the Lemurian civilization, specifically Mu. And the power that they draw from the system is part and parcel with their mythology, their sorcery, all their beliefs. And it's very interesting.
All right, now let me ask you to speculate on something, because you have studied ley lines.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say that these pyramids that are out on the floor of the Pacific Ocean we saw in the pictures tonight, let's say they are Lemurian.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say that it is a power generating system, or a power system, we'll just say a power system. Is it generating the energy that's flowing through ley lines, or is it drawing its energy from ley lines?
My initial reaction, my intuition based on what I've studied, is to say that their machinery that has tapped into the existing energy system. The Earth produces this energy naturally.
Okay, and what would they have used all of this energy for? I mean, we're looking at a photograph that, let's assume that it is Lemurian. It's ancient technology. It's obviously putting out a lot of energy We looked at that Naval Observatory picture, or Naval Research Laboratory picture. It's obviously putting out lots of energy. What would they have used it for?
Well, they could have used it for mundane things such as powering their homes, powering their official structures, powering the civic tools of their whatever, you know, communication or transportation systems they might have. However, they might also have used it to control, for instance, something like the Ring of Fire. In other words, to control as much as they could the eruptions and nature, so to protect their civilization. I mean, imagine, we refer to this time as the Golden Age, this long ago forgotten time when they talk about how perfect and wonderful the world was to live in year round. It was like perfect weather year round, for example. Well, what if they were using this technology to create this artificial perfection of climate and environment?
Well, if they were, something went wrong. If they were doing that, something went wrong, because they went down to the bottom of what is today the Pacific. Maybe a lesson to us now as we try controlling the weather. Walter, it's been great having you with us again. Fascinating, fascinating topic. I appreciate you for bringing all of that up in our discussion today. All right, folks, tomorrow night, Brooks Agnew will be with me. We'll be talking about alternative energy. We might bring some of this up again. Maybe. You just have to be here and find out. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back. Again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.